last week's U.S. presidential election. But because of electoral vote pledges, Donald Trump has been named president-elect. KCSB's Lisa Osborne spoke with Jack Pitney, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College in Claremont, to find out more about how the Electoral College works and whether this method of choosing a president is still relevant today.
When we vote on Election Day, we're not actually voting for president. Rather, we're voting for slates of electors. If you voted for Clinton, you were voting for one slate of Clinton electors. If you voted for Trump, you were voting for another slate of Trump electors. And in most states, the candidate who gets the most votes wins all of the electoral votes. That is, that candidate's slate of electors votes in the Electoral College in December.
That's on a state-by-state basis.
And there are two exceptions to this, Maine and Nebraska, which use a district system. The winner of each congressional district gets an electoral vote for that district, and the statewide winner gets two additional votes. But in this election, that really isn't a major consideration. Rather, it's that the electors are going to meet in their states on December 19th. Many people are saying that because Hillary Clinton has clearly won a plurality of the popular vote, electors should consider voting for her instead of the candidate Donald Trump for whom they're pledged. That's probably not going to happen.
They've only pledged their vote, so they haven't made their final decision?
Well, here's the way it works. The Electoral College was originally designed to be a deliberative body. Of course, you say it's a body, it meets each state's electors meet separately in each state. They never get together in one place. But the idea was electors would deliberate. And so the idea was they would be free agents. It very quickly in our system turned into a system where electors were pledged to particular candidates. And that's the system we've taken for granted. But those pledges are not recognized in the Constitution. 29 states and the District of Columbia have laws that purport to require electors to vote for the candidates to whom they're pledged. Most constitutional scholars think those laws are unenforceable because of the original intent of the Constitution. In any case, no elector in the entire history of the United States has ever been punished for supporting a candidate to whom he or she was not pledged.
So was this set up originally so smaller states or less populated states had just as much of a voting decision as the bigger states or more populated areas? How did the Electoral College get set up in the first place?
It was the Electoral College was part of the bundle of compromises that created the system we have. It had both a popular character, that is, the size of the state is reflected in the electoral vote, but also a federal character in that each state gets two electors as an equivalent for the number of its senators. Therefore, the smaller states proportionately have a bit more influence on the Electoral College than their population would otherwise indicate.
How do you become electoral delegate?
You become an elector in most states by being a faithful party activist. In most states, and the laws and procedures vary a bit, but this is generally the case. If you have a long history of supporting the party, if you have worked in campaigns, that's how you get to be an elector. It's an honor. There's no expectation that there is any deliberative duty associated with it. And that's why, for all the furor that's going on right now, it's extremely unlikely that we'll have a reversal of the Election Day outcome. The people who are elected as Trump electors are faithful Republicans. That's why they were chosen in the first place. So it is extremely unlikely that any of them will switch to Clinton, much less a number sufficient to reverse the outcome of the election.
So there are Republican and Democrat electors in each state, and then it's whichever way the state goes, that's who get the votes?
That's right. Here in California, Clinton won. So on December 19th, a slate of Democratic electors will meet in Sacramento, all Democrats. Trump won the state of Texas, so on the same date, a slate of Republican electors will meet in Austin to vote for Donald Trump. Except in Maine and Nebraska, all of the states have a unit rule. Whichever candidate wins the most votes, even if it's less than 50%, that candidate gets all of the electors.
Is this still the best system to elect a president in today's world when the last 20 years, we've had two presidents who did not receive the popular vote, Al Gore and now Hillary Clinton?
Well, you just put your finger on one argument in favor of a direct popular vote. That is, it represents the will of a majority or a plurality of the American people. The argument for the Electoral College is this. If, in fact, we did have a direct popular vote, first, candidates would follow very, very different kinds of campaign strategies. Instead of visiting smaller, less populated states, they would focus their efforts on running up the vote total in places where they have high concentration of support. The second argument in favor of the Electoral College is if we had a direct popular vote, in case of a very close election, you would have a contest in just about every precinct in the United States, because candidates would have their people go over just about every ballot cast and figuring if they could just squeeze out one or two more votes per precinct, they could reverse the outcome of the election. So if you liked Florida in 2000, you would love a national popular vote. So there are arguments on both sides of the question.
That's KCSB's Lisa Osborne speaking with Jack Pitney, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College, about the Electoral College and how it works.